What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Before we begin, I want to call upon all you men out there and ask you if you're looking for ways to go deeper in your life, find personal empowerment, emotional freedom, and redefine the legacy that you'll leave. If you're interested in that, then listen up. It's time to check out the Vulnerable Heroes Men's Retreat Weekends. Their VH2 class of guys has 6 spots open and available, and in those retreat weekends, you're going to expect 2 4-day retreats 90 days apart, located in the Cascade Mountains, 2 hours outside of Seattle. With that, you're going to get small group coaching, exercises, personal growth sessions, and storytelling. All is included in lodging, food, and activities such as fishing, hiking, games, and much, much more. Development of a personal legacy plan that you get to take with you, as well as weekly group accountability check-ins, and monthly coaching with trainer and coach Lucas Mack. So along with all of that, you also become a member and get membership to the private Vulnerable Hero Legacy community. If any of this sounds pretty interesting for all of you out there, go check it out. For more information, go to www.lucasmack.com/retreats to find out more about the Vulnerable Heroes and so that you can become your own Vulnerable Hero. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I am your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I am on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 4 of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Today, we are talking to a buddy of mine who I just met this year. His name's Tucker Stein. He's from California, and he is a non-hunter. But hopefully, through this podcast and through talking with him and building a friendship and relationship with him, we're going to persuade him into joining us on our adventure of primal adventure. So, first off, welcome to the show, Tucker. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thanks for having me, Johnny. Pleasure to be here. And yes, I am a future hunter convert. We'll call myself a convert.
I love it. So what do you do down in San Diego?
I am as native as they come to San Diego, so 40 plus years down here. I love being by the beach, by the ocean. I've never lived landlocked, so if that gives you any idea of the kind of lifestyle we live down here. But my whole background has always been marketing communications, brand management. So advertising industry, all sorts of communications, media, anything related to marketing, advertising, that's what I've been doing the last 25 years.
Well, that's awesome. So part of our story that we're going to share is how I have been trying to build my platform and mission of Washington Backcountry, but also launching the Soulful Hunter Podcast, and about how I've really come to realize that mentorship is conservation, but also hunting has the power to transform your lives through that primal adventure. And so I want to talk with you about your take on that as someone who is going to be going on their first hunt at some point, someday, and what it was through conversations that you and I have had over the past 5-6 months of getting to know each other that really shifted your mindset and changed your perspective on why you would even want to hunt.
Love it. Two things come to mind as soon as you said that. The first thing is, and this is coming from as city slicker as they come in Southern California, I grew up, even though I was born in Colorado, I grew up here on the coast, but my parents always raised us to go to the mountains every year. So I did have an affinity for the mountains, but the hunting aspect actually never crossed my mind. So when we think about mountains, we think more of skiing, hiking, horseback riding, that sort of thing. But hunting never came across our minds. And part of that, I think, is because my My dad was never a hunter. Grandparents were never hunters, et cetera, et cetera. But two things came to mind. One, for us city slickers, hunting, there's this fear factor attached to it. And I think a lot of it has to do with just the fear of the unknown. And I grew up in Boy Scouts, shooting black powder rifles, 22s, but I never ever felt comfortable, or I always felt fearful of actually doing that with hunting animals. So that's the first thing. That would be fear. The second thing is, because I've been around the media so much, and a lot of my job's been around marketing and advertising, media has distorted, at least from my perspective, distorted what hunting looks like and that whole concept of trophy hunting. So when you and I first started talking and you said that you are a hunter, I immediately had these kind of preconceptions, misconceptions, or just my own experiences attached to that imagery. And as soon as you started talking about primal adventure and getting back to nature and creating community and actually adding soul to hunting, it immediately piqued my interest. And I realized that there was a lot about the hunting world that I knew absolutely nothing about. And it was completely, you know, I don't want to say jaded, but just like it didn't have the positive connotation that you, or the spin that you had put on it. And right away I was like, I want to learn more about this.
Yeah, man, that is so cool to hear you say that. And I really appreciate you taking the time to even be open-minded and have this conversation. It's something that is missing in today's society. You know, people are so comfortable on their couches with their internet and their lattes and fast service of all kinds, with groceries being delivered to their front doorstep and all that, that to take your place out of comfort and put yourself in a place of the unknown and to pursue adventure is what can change your life and also ultimately give you purpose.
Absolutely. And I think that's what struck me the most is when you started talking about what it meant for your childhood, what it meant for you as an adult onset hunter, which I thought was something I'd never even heard of before. You think of hunting, it's like, oh, it's in your blood, it's in your DNA. You start when you're a kid, you grow up with it, it's part of you. And I think that was also part of my fear was, I assume that every hunter grew up like literally coming out of the womb with a gun in their hand. And I know I'm being serious. And I never thought about the fact that you could actually get into hunting later on in life. So when you told me, you know, again, when after first meeting you, I thought, oh, this guy's been hunting since he was a baby. And you told me you had just started hunting, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I was like, oh, wow, that's incredible. I never thought about that being a hobby that you can get into later on in life. So that right off the bat. And then you started talking about purpose and your connection back to nature and what inspires you. I was like, there's definitely something deeper and bigger here that I want to learn more about.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's missing in the hunting community is the fact that it is so common thought that if you weren't raised a hunter, you're never going to be able to become one, or at least yes, become one and be successful at that.
Right.
So that's one of the missions that here at the Soulful Hunter podcast is to transform mindsets and break down barriers and bridge the gap for people who have always seeked after or sought after adventure in their life and yet didn't know where to start. So I'm using you as a little bit of a guinea pig as to what is going through your mind. And so the people that are listening to this podcast and thinking, hey man, you know, this might be something that I want to do, or I'm really new at it. What are some things that are scary to think about and yet exciting or maybe a little daunting?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up because here's my analogy, and you're going to laugh at this. And this is my Southern California analogy to it. It's the same thing for surfers here in Southern California. So everyone, when they meet me, they're like, oh, you grew up in Southern California, blonde hair, blue eyes, you must be an awesome surfer. I picked up the board once. I was so bad at it, I have not surfed since. And there's this concept or this myth that when you go out into the surfing world, it's like if you don't know where to go, if you don't hang out with the right people, then you'll be completely ostracized from society. And you see these surfing movies and people get out there, it's like, oh, you're no good, you know, get out of here, it's territorial. That's exactly the same the way I looked at hunting, is if I were to walk out there right now and start hunting, I'd be lost. No one would accept me. I'd be an outcast, and then the whole experience would be miserable. So when you and I first started talking and your whole concept around mentorship and conservation, like, I mean, there's actually people out there that want to help people or rookies that are older in life want to learn the sport, that totally transformed my perception of it too. So I think there is that kind of that legend approach to it, where you think like, okay, I'm not, this isn't for me. I don't belong. I'm not going to be part of this community. And as soon as you use the word mentorship, I'm like, that's pretty cool. There's somebody actually that's willing to care about it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to think, and thank you, by the way, but it's pretty cool to think that there's safety in numbers. You know, when you go out and you're an individual on a lone adventure, there's some mystique that goes along with it, and yet is completely terrifying because you have no one to rely upon or to have some checks and balances in what you're doing and how you're going about things. And so having that community is so important. And that is what we're trying to do here, is to provide an environment that is welcoming to people.
Amen. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Because I think that would probably be my biggest barrier to entering a sport like this. You know, it's not one of those sports that, you know, you go out and buy a tennis racket and you take a few lessons and, you know, boom, you're in it. And this is something that's totally different. And if someone's willing to take the time and really mentor you into the program, I'm all in. It's the kinds of sports or, you know, that feel like unless you, you know, pay thousands and thousands of dollars for lessons, or you were coached by the top rated coaches in the state, it's like one of those things that, you know, you would never want to touch. But this is one of those things where it combines nature, which I love, which I don't get enough of because, you know, I'm a father of two and, you know, working and et cetera, et cetera. And it combines community, which I absolutely love. And it combines something that's totally adventurous, which as a 40 plus year old dad, male, who's constantly searching for something new, that completely sparked an interest for me.
Right. Gives you a little something besides just having to drive a Harley. Gives you that new fire to fuel your bones.
It's my new midlife crisis. I love it. What did you do when you had a midlife crisis? I picked up hunting.
Yeah, I picked up a rifle. I picked up a bow, and I went towards the mountains to find myself.
Exactly.
So that is so cool. So you used to grow up in the wilderness and the mountains and being a part of that. What do you think about getting your hands dirty and actually taking the life of an animal?
Baby steps, Johnny, baby steps. it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I actually listened to your second episode when you were talking with Tony, and it wasn't until hearing even from Tony's perspective of gutting and skinning, and it's like I hadn't even thought about those elements, right? You know, when you think, I don't think until you've experienced it, the only thing you think about is loading the gun, taking aim, and shooting. And it's like, you know, okay, you're done. It's like, well, no, that's just the first part of it. That's where it starts.
Yep.
And I never thought about, okay, take the process all the way to the end. It's like, okay, well, you just shot the animal. What are you going to do with it? So yeah, there, right. That's the whole fear of the unknown, John. When that's the stuff that I know nothing about, but I'm totally willing to learn. And yeah, that's, I almost think now as I think about it, that's even more fearful to me than the shot itself.
Yeah, I think you're not alone in that. That is one of the struggles, is like, all right, I got this animal down. Now what, you know? And you're definitely not alone. I know I had those thoughts when I was just starting out. So one of the things I want to talk with you about is the legacy in which, by you starting something new later on in life, is now going to be something new that you're going to be able to pass towards your children if that's something that they want to pursue. So tell me what your thoughts are on legacy.
I love that word. It's definitely something, especially the moment you become a father, your entire outlook on life changes. And I don't think that concept of legacy really enters the picture until, you know, you're holding the life of somebody else that you realize you're responsible for. So the concept of legacy excites me. And I think, you know, I've got a 14-year-old son and 11-year-old daughter now, especially with the son, thinking about, okay, what did I grow up with and, you know, what did I love about my childhood? What would I change? And now that I'm a father, it's like, okay, looking at the same thing. I got a 14-year-old son. What inspires him? What are the things that we like to do together? And what can I do to, you know, nurture, nature him into something that he wants to do? And I'm always looking for things to connect us. And, you know, I was raised in a very different generation. It was the very beginning of Nintendo, Atari. Like, you know, video games were a luxury, and now they're a commodity. And I think about the technology of today and raising a kid these days, and some of that connection to nature and some of that connection to what you call primal adventure, which I think is another reason why I love that concept so much, is our teenagers and our kids are just completely distracted by things that don't even excite me. And what concerns me about when you talk about legacy and the impact that you have on your own kids and the people around you is, are we getting completely disconnected to this technology era? And I love the idea that hunting strips away all of that most of the technology as we appear, you know, in terms of texting and video games and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it becomes the video game of life, like getting out there and actually doing the things that I remember doing as a kid. And that excites me. So when we think about legacy for me, it's what are the things that I can reconnect with my own kids, my own family, that I can bring them up in so that we stay connected on a level that you can't with a lot of the technology that's out there today. So that's what excites me about the legacy concept and starting new traditions, not just carrying on things that I did with my own father, but what are the things that my kids like to do that could be totally different, or I introduce them something that's totally different that gets them excited. Because sometimes when you talk about, oh, I used to do this with my dad, the first thing that goes through their head is, oh, you know, it's not unique, or it's not special for them. So
yeah,
it's antiquated. You're right. So one of the things I like about the concept of legacy is, what can you start that's new that you get to experience with your own kids that's different? So that was the other thing that kind of excited me, is this something that I could now pass on to my son as something that I didn't have as a kid, but maybe we can start it.
Yeah. Family traditions is a really interesting topic. And I know with my own family, I've been this June will be 6 years of marriage, and my oldest boy is 4 and a half. And I remember, you know, when my oldest was born, it was like, all right, what type of traditions do we want to start for holidays for our family? Which is, you know, completely different thoughts of how things used to be, of like, well, we've been doing this for years and it's always been like this. It's like, well, wait a minute, this is our family and what do I want to pass down? But with that, I also had a buddy of mine who I was teaching with a few years ago, and one of his things that he liked to do with his children is to go through a process of learning something brand new for both of them and to share it at the exact same time. And he said that was a moment that really shifted the dynamic between the relationship of father and son. And it doesn't just have to be father and son, you know, mother, son, father, daughter, all of that. But the concept is that there's so often is that parents are the superior, the children,
authority.
Yeah.
Yep.
The authority. And then you have the children that are just listening and waiting, but to go head first and get your hands dirty with your child and learning a process and being able to share that experience with them is only going to make that bond stronger.
I love that concept, because I think about family traditions and what I did with my own father, and there was Indian guides. Well, I tried the Indian guides. It was okay, but it wasn't exactly what my son wanted. You know, we talked about camping. It was okay, but it wasn't exactly our favorite. So I think one of the things and I love the idea that it's something that we learn together. So there isn't this dad knows best and you will follow what I do. Like it's not a forced fit. I like the idea is that we come up with something that both of us, you know, we both love nature. We both like being outside. We both like trying things new. Could this be one of those things where we actually get to do something together? And you're right, be rookies together. I love the idea that legacy doesn't have to be necessarily passed on from generation to generation, but legacy can be two rookies learning something new that creates something new for our own kids.
Yeah. Us as human beings are meant to be in relationships with one another. And it's so often in what you thought the hunting world was all about was you're not welcome, kind of like that old Forrest Gump, you can't sit here type attitude. And yet really this new millennial type hunter, this adult onset hunter is re-changing how everything has been thought about and just breaking down barriers and walls. And we get to create hunting however we want to create hunting. We get to reinvent, reimagine it. And that is the beauty of what us adults can do, because we don't have anyone to lead the way and show us how it's always been done. We are learning as we're going, and that is what is strengthening us and allowing our roots to grow so much deeper, and for us to fall in love with that primal adventure and getting out and being one with nature.
I love everything you just said. And like I said before, I think one of the things that, you know, it's interesting, about 3 years ago, we were sitting in the living room and we all looked at each other. It was a summer. And it was one of those moments where it was like, okay, camps are over. This is over. We got 3 weeks before school starts. And we all looked at each other and said, what are we going to do? And it's like, we kept going down the list of things and it was always the same things. We did that last year. We did this year. We did this. And for some reason, I don't remember who it was, somebody said, let's go to the mountains. And it was like, oh my gosh, we haven't done that. And we picked Mammoth, which is in the Eastern Sierras here in California. And we got in the car, drove 6 hours away, and it was one of the most fun family trips we've ever taken. No technology, no TVs. We stayed in a really cool cabin. We got to go hiking. We got to go swimming. We got to go chase waterfalls. We got to go fishing. There wasn't 1 ounce of like indoor activity other than literally putting our heads down to sleep. And we just started doing it over and over again. And it reminded me how much that I felt a connection to nature and how much I was missing it. And being able to see my kids in that environment and watching them get excited over things that I didn't even think they were excited about was like falling in love with childhood all over again. It was like bringing up that inner child that I had missed for so long. And I didn't even know it was there. So I love the idea that, you know, we can, you know, express ourselves in nature. We can express ourselves through activity. We can express ourselves outside of being confined to our house. And I'm excited to see where some of these adventures take. And that's exactly why you and I are talking right now. Is I just think there's something really cool about starting something, A, that's fearful, but two, sounds incredibly exciting, that I'm pumped for.
Yeah, the fear is what will really make or break you. But if you can get over that fear, it's only gonna fuel your fire and make you stronger and help you on your journey. And it's really cool to hear that you're willing and open to take this and run with it and see where it leads you. And obviously for you to be able to have the potential to pass it to your children as well.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, but here's the other thing that is, Johnny, had I not met you and had I not known that there was an opportunity for that mentoring type of environment or a way in, so to speak, I never, ever would have put hunting on my bucket list. So the fact that you're willing to kind of step out of, you know, or debunk the myth around hunting being this, you know, super expert, you know, Paul Bunyan mountain man type of sport where you can just literally bring in people who are total rookies and have absolutely no experience and want to help them, that makes a huge difference. So that's exactly why this concept of Soulful Hunter and getting out there and being a part of something like this is meaningful.
Oh man, I appreciate that. You know, it's too often in life that if we don't have help, or if we don't have success, or we don't have help in finding success, we give up. And being a school teacher, you learn so often that if a child doesn't get success, however you measure that success, in the first couple tries, they're going to end up giving up and never returning back to that as something that they're going to enjoy, specifically in physical education, which is what I teach. But apply that to life. So when you were in your marketing job, did you not have someone come along and kind of show you the ropes of how to do things the right way?
I did. And that you bring up a good point, you know, and anything that you feel passionate about, you'll go to any end to figure out a way to make it work. And it's usually the people that, you know, you model your own behavior after, or you see something in them, or You know, it's like, I want what they have, and you model yourself or you go after what they have. And, you know, that creates a great mentoring, you know, program. And you're right. And you don't get that in every industry. Or it's, sometimes it's hard to find those people. But when you do, you latch on, and that's what kind of creates your roadmap.
You know, it's really interesting. You just brought this to my mind, but the whole concept of you saying that you're fearful to try things, and yet you are really thankful for the opportunity of someone to be able to mentor you or be there, or there's a community of people that want to help you. And in the Bible, it talks about in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. And so it just kind of connects the dots for me right now, the concept of when you have these other people to go to for mentorship, it allows fear to dissipate and allows that safety feeling to come in. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up, because it's, you know, when you think about hunting, it's also one of those things, okay, you're involving weapons. And there's automatically that fear of, okay, this is something that's totally out of my comfort zone. But you're right. When you eliminate or, you know, you mitigate some of that fear, some of those natural inclinations to want to not do something kind of dissipate, and you actually get more excited about them because that fear goes away. So, and that all comes, you know, that whole concept of mentorship creates that lessening of the fear, which is great.
Yeah. So let's get into a little bit more of the hunting side of things. You know that my first big game animal I shot was a black bear.
The bear.
The story. it's gonna be coming out to a lot of the world here pretty soon. But the black bear. You being someone who's never hunted before, what game do you want to chase? What animal is it that you think really speaks to your soul and you want to pursue as like, okay, that's what I want to tackle first?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because we talk about fear and safety and so forth. You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, okay, well, go the route that's the path of least resistance. And that would be like fowl or, you know, ducks or birds. It's like, okay, you know, you're not going to get attacked by a bird, right? You know, so go for the bird. But then I think to myself, well, okay, you can start with the bird. And then I think, well, path of least resistance, that's a pretty small animal. So that's probably going to be a pretty small target to hit. And then I think, okay, go big. You know, you go elk or moose or bear. It's like, well, maybe you might be able to shoot that because it's a lot bigger. But then all of a sudden that whole idea of fear comes in. You're like, oh, wait a minute. That, you know, that creates a whole other level. So to be brutally honest, John, I'm just excited about the experience. I would actually, you know, lean towards, okay, ask my mentor, what do you think would create the best rookie hunting experience, and I would go from there. So I don't really have an aspiration for a particular type of animal. I would just want to go in knowing that I would want to have an experience that makes me excited about it, so that I want to keep coming back.
Man, that is a great perspective. And for any rookie hunters out there that are hearing this for the very first time, I want you to think about what it is that you want to pursue. And is it for you more importantly to harvest an animal, or is it more importantly for you to go on an adventure and really try something brand new? Because whatever that is, feel free to reach out to us. We can help direct traffic and where you can go. But a lot of that's also going to be derived upon what state and region and weapon are you going to be choosing as well. So if you had to choose, Tucker, between going up into the woods of the mountains, high up, backpacking in and hunting and carrying everything that you have to get you through a week on your back, or camping at a campsite, having your truck there and going from a hunt, what one do you think you'd prefer?
Is there such thing as helicopter hunting?
Yeah, in Texas, you can shoot hogs from a helicopter.
Oh my gosh. I think part of what, now this is, again, coming from someone who's, my only experience in the great outdoors that way would be from a camping perspective. I like the idea that there's an opportunity to create the experience around not just the hunting, but also the camping and or something that's, you know, so it's not uber treacherous or it's all about the hunt. So, I mean, and this is from a rookie perspective, is I'd like to see more of a well-rounded thing so I get, you know, familiar with it and get comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of convenience at first, because I think sometimes the convenience and getting to know the ropes and getting a little more comfortable also mitigates some of that fear. I think going too big too quick for me would be a little daunting.
Yeah.
Well, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. I attribute it a lot to working out in a weight room. If you're trying to hit a lot of heavy weight and you haven't ever worked out before, you might be hurting yourself. But at the same time, if you don't actually try to stretch yourself and push yourself, you're not going to truly get the results that you're looking for.
Lower weight, more reps. However that equates to hunting, figure it out.
and that's what's beautiful about it, is that it's so unique to each individual that, you know, some people, for example, I've never waterfowl hunted. So ducks, geese, all that, never hunted after them, but it's something that I want to. And yet there's people that that's all they want to do, and they could care less about the big game. So this is where hunting is such a broad umbrella, and there's all these different facets and avenues that you can find passion for and find your own primal adventure through.
Absolutely.
So, man, this is a great conversation. I'm really looking forward to continuing this. And ladies and gentlemen, those of you who do not know, Tucker is going to be an adult onset hunter here pretty soon. We're going to invite him up to the state of Washington, and we're going to take him out, and we'll have him on this podcast multiple times to share his experience and his stories and his perspective to go along with it. One thing I want to share with all of you is that when you live life in comfort, there's not going to be a lot of gains that you make. It is when we live in a life of discomfort and on edge is where you're going to be forced to make decisions of either getting better or getting worse. And in your life, it's always about advancing and making improvements. And how are you going to improve upon your own soul? How are you going to make yourself a better father, a better husband, a better worker, a better employee, a better friend? All of these different things. And so applying that, we're going to mesh these two together, is how does hunting make you a better person? And that is the concept that we're going to try to reimagine and reinvent hunting and what it can do for your own soul. So Tucker, we're asking you, what is it that you think hunting can do for you to make yourself a better person?
Well, I'm a firm believer that in order for us to be happy humans on this planet, we have to have balance in life. And I think one of the things that, you know, especially, you know, a dad of two, I've been married almost 20 years now, you know, at the peak of a career, that sort of thing, it's very easy for us to get off balance. And I think one of the things that I'm really looking forward to in terms of, you know, one of the things you and I talked about before is this concept of what does hunting bring out in your soul? And for me, that soul allows me to be balanced. So I love the idea that hunting has this ability, you know, with the primal adventure on one end, but also the ability to create this element of balance between community and friendships and some solitude, some, you know, complete fear of the unknown, a way to meet new people, a way to reconnect with my kids. All of those things you think about, it all takes us away from the day-to-day routine. And I think that's one of the things that I look forward to in something like this is, again, keeping myself well-balanced. And if I'm not well-balanced, I'm not the person that I want to be. And you and I have talked about this before, John, but, you know, I think the keys to being a good father, a good husband, and good at your job is the ability to make sure that you're investing in yourself the right way to keep that balance.
Yeah.
So when I think about hunting, I think that's an investment in myself to keep that soulful balance.
Yeah. You cannot love others if you don't love yourself first. Mm-hmm. And whatever it is that you need to do in order to love yourself and truly love yourself, do it so that when you return home, you are the best version of your own self.
Absolutely.
And that's beautifully put, that you love to keep that balance. Have you ever had any wild game before?
Yes. I mean, as wild as it gets would be buffalo, boar, and elk.
What'd you think?
I think I probably didn't have the right person cooking it for me. I don't, you know, buffalo is pretty common here in Southern California. We get it a lot, and usually it's, you know, in the form of burgers, you know, bison or buffalo burgers. But the only game that I've had was in Colorado, and it was done, you know, from some family friends. And I remember it just being tough and chewy. It just, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't exciting to me, but I've heard nothing but great things. If done well and cooked well, it's awesome. So I'm looking forward to to eating it with people that know how to cook it right. And yeah, I'm excited about that.
So one question I have, actually, I have a few questions in regards to this, because this brings up a whole new topic, is what happens if you don't like the meat? What's your take on that?
My take is there's always going to be someone in need of food or provisions. So if I don't like it, that probably means somebody else will.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things you and I have talked about too, and I think another thing that from my perspective, being that city slicker, is hunting also gets a bad rap, because that idea of hunting, you know, the trophy hunting, you know, no one ever uses the meat. And I think that there's something to be said about the hunting that you're engaging in, is it's, and I don't know all the terminology, this is where I have to learn it, but is it's really the full provision and providing for the family, and, you know, using the whole carcass and the whole animal. So I'm not used to that, and it's unfamiliar to me, but I know that if I don't particularly like something, then I know somebody else will be able to take advantage of that.
Yeah. One of the things that people talk about quite often, and I actually mentioned this on the last episode, was that, you know, like Africa, it's so, people are so against hunting in Africa. It's like, man, how could you ever shoot these animals that we see in a zoo? And yet over there, it's commonplace to see these animals and have them be shot and killed and eaten. You know, I actually have a student from Africa in one of my classes, and I asked him if he ever had any wild game. And he said, yeah, zebra and cheetah was a regular occurrence in his meal. And yet, I look at that and I'm like, man, I'm not sure if I would do that. But yet at the same time, I would, because that would be common.
You right. Know?
So, and that's where people will quick to judge, but,
well, and we get fearful of what we don't understand, and it's very easy to judge. And if you don't understand, you know, the meaning and what it does, and, Yeah, it's very easy for us to quick to judge, and that's what the media has been doing, especially with the hunting industry. And that's why I like what you're doing too, John, is that you're taking that stigma away from what hunting is in the media, and really bringing it back to what it was meant to be thousands and thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Just man versus nature versus yourself. And, you know, we're all made up of energy, and it's just a transfer of energy, just like money going from one hand to another. The circle, yep, of life, and it, death brings life, and it just transfers from one to the next, and it's just a part of life. It's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So now, through conversating with you, I came to learn that your father actually used to manage the Tejon Ranch in California.
Yeah. So my dad's background is real estate development, and has been for years and years and years, until he retired a few years ago. But Tejon Ranch, which is one of the largest, you know, working ranches, it's in the States, it's 275,000 acres. So it's the size of Rhode Island. And it sits right in the southern part of the Central Valley of California. And they hired and brought him on board because they wanted to kind of really diversify their portfolio and create some real estate investments on the property. And one of their core pillars is hunting and opening up the ranch to some of the best game hunting in the Southwest. And so you talk about, you know, putting a fish out of water. I mean, he was, you know, grown and being raised, you know, to go up to the mountains and camp and do all that kind of fun stuff, but never actually having hunted himself. That was, talk about a rookie. To this day, he's only hunted a handful of times, and he's done some elk hunting and some boar hunting on the property. But yeah, that was a fish out of water, but it's a huge part of the culture there. So I got exposed to it in terms of hearing about it and hearing a lot of stories about it and a lot of the history around it, which I love history. So having hunting being a big part of the ranch's history, that intrigued me. But again, not having that mentor or someone that really could guide me into what hunting might look like on the ranch, I never pursued it. So I've only heard stories about it.
Yeah. Did your father ever talk to you about it, about his hunts? Or like, what was it that, why did he not pursue it?
I think, you know, I would have to ask him again, but the more I think about it, he went on a couple of guided hikes, and it was because they were bringing in some investors to look at the property, and he went out with some of the, you know, the top hunting guides and so forth and experienced it, but he wasn't there for himself or for his own experience. His experience really was there to entertain investors. So for him, it was never an experience that really felt authentically to him. So I think he would argue that if he would go back and do it again, it would be like, can somebody actually show me how to do this? So I remember him specifically coming back and saying, I'm not sure that I could ever do that again because I've had no lessons in it. You know, he doesn't even know the right terminology, but it was something that really excited him, you know, and he was the guy that wore the cowboy hats and the cowboy boots and the you know, the big belt buckle and, you know, played the part of the CEO of a ranch. But, you know, the back end of that was he had no hunting experience, no horseback riding experience that much. And he was the city slicker cowboy from Southern California that was operating a ranch. So I think there was a big part of him that, and he was there for almost 20 years. There's a big part of him, I think, that left wishing he had more. But I don't think he had the right mentors or the right people to guide him through that process.
Now, is that, you really think that's what kept him from diving in, was the mentors and the teaching and the learning process?
Well, and the reason why I say that, John, is because the ranch, even though it was 275,000 acres, it was very small with employees. So there's very few opportunities for him to actually get a lot of guidance.
Yeah.
So I'm projecting that, I'm making some assumptions, but I do know it was definitely out of his comfort zone because we laughed a lot about it. So, because he always referred to him as, you know, that, you know, what's the actor that was in City Slickers? I can't even think of his name, but he was that guy that, you know, he looked the part, but clearly couldn't play the part. And so he was definitely uncomfortable, but he said it was a lot of fun. But he wished he had more time to do it.
Billy Crystal, I'm pretty sure, is who you're thinking
of. Billy Crystal, thank you. I could not. I see his, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, I can see him in When Harry Met Sally, but what the heck is his name?
That's right.
Billy Crystal.
Oh, man, that's cool. Yeah, one of the things that is interesting about hunting specifically, so you'll learn this when you dive into it and also you get the opportunity to teach your son, is hunting seasons are so short. You wait an entire calendar year to the potential of you being able to go out in the woods or the wilderness for maybe a week, maybe 4 days, maybe it's just a weekend, and you put all this time and effort and energy into this one short moment. And that is also what can make it so special, because you get out of it what you put in. And if you don't actually put in a lot of effort, you're not going to have a lot of success. And success, whether it's in harvesting an animal or just you knowing what you're doing. I think one of the biggest, most enjoyable moments for me growing in my process of becoming a hunter is when I bridged the gap of hiking with a gun to seeing animals that I was actually pursuing. Whether or not I was shooting one or they were legal to shoot, when I was able to walk into the woods or walk into the mountains or the desert or whatever it is and have a specific target in mind and still lay eyes on it, I was like, okay, I did it. I'm accomplishing something. I am improving. I'm getting those gains. And that was, it made, even for that one weekend out of an entire calendar year, it made it worth it. It was like, okay, I know what I'm doing. Next year is going to be my moment.
Right. You know, you bring up an interesting point, John. I hadn't thought about this. One of the things you were just talking about, my dad and some barriers to pursuing hunting. California in particular, especially Southern California, the big word is accessibility. So it is difficult when you're in Southern California to get to a place where you can actually legally hunt. And what happened with Tejon Ranch is because the season is so short and because it is so popular with, you know, the two largest cities in the state of California are only, you know, an hour to a half an hour away from Tejon Ranch. The waiting list just to get a permit to get on the property was so long that that was the other thing is he didn't even have access to it all the time, even though we worked there. Because of the laws in California, and that's the other thing that, that we face here in this state, is the laws are different. So when you talk about, you know, I remember being up there just recently up in the Seattle area and being able to get into the mountains within an hour. We don't have that accessibility here. We have to go, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles for us to get to a point where we can actually have true big game hunting. So I think when you think about it from our perspective, or my perspective, is accessibility has probably kept me from hunting too, because for me to get to a place that allows me to hunt is, you know, that's not just a weekend. You got to take, you know, at least 3 or 4 days out of your week to do it.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And one of the topics in, that we're going to be diving into throughout this podcast is the concept of urban hunting versus wilderness hunting. And some people really look down upon it as far as like, how could you shoot our pet, or how could you shoot an animal that is in the city or within city limits? And yet, if that is the adventure for you, or if that's how you're providing meat for your family, or if that is fulfilling your soul, what's wrong with that in comparison to the accessibility of you not being able to get out to national forests or BLM land or DNR or all these other public lands in which you right. would or potentially could go to?
Yeah, because is you know, I live 30 minutes north of downtown San Diego, and I usually walk at night. And last night I came across 3 coyotes just on my walk alone. And we have so many coyotes in the area, you know, you'd think we were out in the wilderness. But, you know, I see them all the time, but there's nothing we can do about it. So that's a whole nother story. Now, right. You know, you can take the BB gun and try something, but that would get me in trouble too.
Right. Yeah, you gotta be careful in the city limits, especially with today's circumstances and politics of gun control, and everyone has a video camera and taking pictures and whatnot.
It's true.
What can get on social media.
Exactly.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you, Tucker, is on your journey of diving into becoming a hunter, is what can Washington backcountry and the Soulful Hunter do for you or offer for you that is going to be something that's super beneficial?
That's a great question, John. And one of the things that I love about trying new things, you know, new adventures, connecting with people, is this idea of creating community. And I think one of the things that was really attractive that you and I had been talking about, that it's going to be on the website and so forth, is this idea of a forum. And I think having a place where people like me who have a lot of questions or want to connect with others that may not be familiar with the hunting industry and or are super familiar but are willing to give out advice, there's an opportunity on the website. It's safe. It's protected. I can ask any question. And I feel like I'm already connecting with people and getting to know the industry better, where I don't have to go out and search for the information myself. I actually get to connect with people who are willing to help out. So I think that concept of having a forum on there is fantastic. So I'm looking forward to creating community even before I start hunting.
I love it. That's what it's all about here at Soulful Hunter, is building that community. It's one of our main pillars of what we believe in and stand for. And one of the things that when I was founding Washington Backcountry, I had this idea is I wanted to branch out more than just weapons and animals. And part of the Washington Backcountry logo is just a mountain with the sun raising behind it. But with the Soulful Hunter, I knew that I wanted to reach further across America and not just be localized to the Pacific Northwest. So I wanted somebody in like Tennessee or Michigan to have interest in being a mentor for anybody. And so part of the reason why I started the Soulful Hunter podcast was the ability to branch out and cross borders throughout the nation. And so if you are listening to this podcast and you are interested in becoming a mentor, or if you are interested in finding a mentor, or you are looking for a hunting partner, or you just want to talk hunting, go to soulfulhunter.com, go to the forum, log in, register, and be a part of the conversation, be a part of the community. You're never going to outgive good. And any time that you can give back to the community and give back to what you love so much, you're only going to be making a difference and being an ambassador and helping people fall in love more with this idea of primal adventure. Man, Tucker, I really look forward to diving into more of this with you on later episodes. And I want to thank you so much. I'm sure all these listeners out there are really going to be able to take away a lot and feel inspired by your journey and your perspective. And I hope they can reach out to you for some information at any point. So how can listeners get a hold of you?
Let's see. Listeners can get a hold of me. Social media, the best way to get a hold of me would just be Instagram or Facebook, which is just, you know, Tucker Stein, STINE. And that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. But you'll be hearing definitely more of me, John, because I want to stay connected and continue to, and you can trace my rookie journey through all of this, because when you and I first started talking about the Soulful Hunter, I mean, this is exactly the type of, I am your ideal demographic, and I can't wait to see how this all unfolds, because, you know, this podcast was literally intended for me, in my mind, you know, it's like designed for me perfectly, because I get to experience all of this and learn all of this, and hopefully other people can learn, because one of the things that I love about this is creating the next generation of hunters. You know, how do you transform an industry like this and create new excitement for people down the road? And it's going to be people like me who get to create new legacies with their kids and inspire a new generation of hunters. So I'm excited to be a part of this journey.
Well, we're honored to have you. You know, one of the things is that how do you get people to fall in love with something if you never teach them? And to have them fall in love with it creates this feeling to want to protect it. And I want to protect hunting. And even though I've only been doing it for 5 or 6 years, I know that I want this to last for generations to come, and I want my children, and not just my children, I want everybody to have access to the same type of feelings and life-changing moments in which hunting has provided me.
I love it. My parting thought is this, is one of the things that I love about what nature does is it allows us to return to that innocent childhood self. And those memories that we have of just being free and, you know, free of worry, free of anxiety, free of all that stuff. And just to be able to just let loose and be in nature. And I love the idea that ideas like the Soulful Hunter and allows us to return to that. And I think that's what's exciting is we get to return to that younger self and experience that freedom that, you know, that inspires us. So thank you for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, you know, there's nothing quite like the innocence of a child to be able to let their guard down and truly be free and be free in nature and to experience life for its fullest and what it has to offer. So I appreciate it. And thanks for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Tucker Stein coming from California. And you're going to be hearing a lot more from him coming up in later episodes. But thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon. Stay soulful, everyone. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast, as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.